Today is Thursday, September 19, 2019. This is a Grand Canyon Oral History interview that we are going to call Part 1 with Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, and Muriel, M-U-R-I-E-L, Canaan, spelled K-A-N-A-N. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Mike and Muriel. How are you?
We're good.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your willingness to be part of this oral history program. I'm going to ask you one at a time. Mike, may I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes.
Thank you. And Muriel, may I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes.
Thank you. Muriel, we had talked a little bit before turning the tape on here about starting this interview with you simply because you got to the North Rim first. What year were you born?
What did you just say?
I'm sorry. What year were you born?
1941.
Okay. And where were you born?
Ephraim, Utah. E-P-H-R-A-I-M. Ephraim.
And what were your parents doing there at the time?
My father was working as a surveyor for the government.
Okay. For the USGS?
But just for a short time.
Huh.
Because he then was hired to go help build the United States, Geneva, the United States Steel Company, in Provo, Utah. He helped build it, and then he stayed and worked there.
Oh, wow.
As a laborer.
Okay.
And we moved then to Provo, Utah, when I was a year old.
And this is the big steel works that's just south of Salt Lake City?
Yes, although it's now all gone. Everything's gone.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
But it was the main employer next to Brigham Young University in the Utah Valley area there for probably, 60 years.
Yes, yeah. Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I did. I had 6 brothers and 1 sister.
Older, younger?
I was right in the middle. 2 older brothers, 1 older sister, 3 younger brothers.
Okay.
Actually, 4 younger brothers, but 1 died very young.
Okay. And 3 younger brothers. Did you guys camp out much when you were young? Did you go,
No.
on weekends, did you go out and around, or were you pretty much, just in town there?
Just in town.
Okay.
Yes.
So then, how was it that you ended up heading to the North Rim?
We had a cousin and neighbor who went down as she graduated from high school to work at the North Rim of the Grand Canyon. And once she got down there, she called my brother, my second oldest brother, and said there was an opening if he wanted to come down and work there as well. And his name was Richard. And so he did. And he went down there and worked for 2 or 3 summers.
What year was that he first went down there? Do you remember?
Yes, give me 1 second. I went in 59. My sister went. He was there, I'm going to say, the summer of 55. Interesting point here. He was working there at the North Rim the summer the 2 United States planes crashed into each other over the North Rim of the Grand Canyon.
1956?
Yes.
Okay.
It was either 55 or 56. And he would have worked there other years, but he developed a brain tumor and died.
I'm sorry.
Yep.
Did...
And then he called when my sister graduated from high school and said, get on the bus and come down and to Cedar City, and they'll give you a ride out to the North Rim. And she was hired on.
And what year was that?
That would have been in 56.
Okay, that same year of the crash.
No, she wasn't there for the crash. 57, 58. I guess 57.
Okay. Okay, that would make sense. And
although I have talked with her, and she would be willing to be interviewed if you want to call her sometime.
Oh, fun. What's her name?
Mariba. M Mariba.
Thank you.
Mariba.
Okay. So you had two then siblings that were working there. Did they tell you stories of their summer adventures there?
Oh, yes. They loved it. They both did.
Fun.
And then I had a younger brother who came down and worked with us also. And we can get to that later. His name was Bob.
Okay. Were you thinking in high school that you wanted to go on to college, or what were you thinking?
College was something my father pretty much talked to us about from the time I can remember. We just lived down the street from Brigham Young University.
Oh.
He did not go to college, had wanted to, but it wasn't, money wasn't available for him.
Uh-huh.
So he wanted all of his kids to, and I think we all did.
Nice.
So, yes, I always expect to go to BYU when I graduated from high school.
Okay. And what were you thinking you wanted to study there?
I had thought I wanted to be a social worker.
Okay.
And then my dad sat me down and talked to me and said, social work is really hard. Why don't you be an elementary school teacher? Because that means you'll also be a social worker.
Okay.
And I really had done lots of child care growing up and loved my brothers and sisters and thought that would be fun, and that is what I became. I became an elementary school teacher and taught for 30 years.
Oh, wow. Nice. Okay.
It was wonderful.
Fun. I always want to kind of touch base and see what people were thinking when they headed out for their work careers, too, especially in the summer. So you graduated from high school then in 1959?
Correct.
Okay. And then did you spend any time in Provo before you headed to the North Rim, or did you just finish graduation and off you went?
Finished graduation and off I went.
And tell me about the travel. What do you remember about that from 1959, getting to the North Rim?
My sister called. She said as soon as she got down there, she would talk with the manager and see if she couldn't get me on.
Okay.
And as soon as she got down there, she did. So I had been out of high school, maybe. I was working at the local movie theater, and I'd been out maybe a week or two when they called and said, come on down. So I got on the Trailways bus there.
Okay.
In Provo, and took it to Cedar City, Utah, and then got on a Parks bus out to the North Rim.
Okay. Was that your first time there?
No, I had gone down with a neighbor across the street when my sister got her on as well, when I was a freshman in high school. Only in those days, it was ninth grade in junior high.
Okay.
And her family invited me to ride with them to take her down, and they drove her to the North Rim, to the campground. She worked at the campground, the inn, as we called it.
Oh.
And they invited me to ride with them to drop her off and get her settled. And then I rode back home with them.
So that would have been 57?
No, that would have been 56.
Okay. What do you remember about that first trip there, 1956?
Oh, just how gorgeous it was. Mm. Just big ponderosa pine trees everywhere, quite isolated. We stopped at Jacob Lake, and I thought that was exciting. And we went through the tunnel at Zion going back.
Okay.
For a little bit extra trip. And so it was just and seeing all the young people there working was just exciting to me.
Fun.
Because that's mostly who was there in those days.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Were kids working their way through college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Working for the summer.
Right.
Okay. Did you go back again then between 56 and 59?
No.
Okay. So you got on the Trailways bus, went down to Cedar City, and then got on the Parks bus.
The Utah Parks bus.
Okay.
That would take what we called the dudes, the sightseers.
Okay.
And they just put you on a seat, and I think we stopped in Zion and had lunch. And then on to the North Rim, something like that.
Okay. And then you would have been assigned housing. Who did you get to? No, there was a dorm there, wasn't there? A women's dorm?
Yeah, there was a girls' dorm and a boys' dorm. And my sister made arrangements for me to be in a room with three other girls.
Okay.
And we just hit it right off, and just all four of us worked the rest of the summer together and thought they were wonderful. And it was just a wonderful, fun experience.
What did you do that first summer?
A cabin maid.
And what did that entail?
Getting up early each morning.
Like four or three?
What? No, I think we had to be where Mabel was at where we were to meet to get our assignments by 7.
Okay.
And maybe even by 7:30, because we got to get up and be at the kitchen by 6:30 if we wanted lunch and breakfast.
Okay.
Meals were provided.
Let's start. You know, would you walk me through your day? What was the kitchen like? What was the food like?
Well, it was basically what they fed in the dining room. They fixed, and we also got to eat in the dining room. And everybody, you actually had to be in the dining room by 6 o'clock if you wanted to eat, because you had to be finished by 6:30, because the dining room opened up for guests by 7.
Okay.
And we ate out in the dining room, and it would just, you know, sometimes there'd be pancakes, sometimes there'd be cold cereal, sometimes there'd be hot cereal, and eggs, just different things each day. Yeah, and the same people who cooked for the guests, what we called the dudes,
mm-hmm.
Cooked for us.
Okay. So
and you just,
that
you
sounds yummy.
Yeah, well, you know what it was. Everything tasted good because it was such a wonderful setting.
Uh-huh. And so you got to look out the big windows there?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Wow. Okay, and then...
Then your work day started. I think we had to be on task by 7.
Okay.
And would show up at the cabin where Mabel, I can't think of her last name, was the cabin mother.
Okay.
The cabin maid's mother in that sense. And she would give us a sheet of paper that would show us which cabins we were to clean that day.
Okay.
That morning. And usually we worked until about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And... all the things you would expect to be done in a motel room, you know, change the bedding and mop, you know, sweep and mop the floor. The floors were all linoleum. Sweep and mop the floors and clean the bathrooms and dust what little thing, what there was to dust.
Mm-hmm.
Push, we had little carts we pushed around that had the clean linens.
Okay.
And the linen hut, that's what we call it, the linen hut. You'd show up and then Mabel would come. Mabel and assistants to her would come through and check and be sure you had done everything that you were supposed to do.
Okay.
And you worked with a friend.
Okay.
And you could choose who you worked with of the cabin maids.
All right. Who did you work with?
Her name was Kathy Lloyd, and she was from Salt Lake City. And that's the first time I had met her, and we became cabin maid partners.
Nice. How many cabins... would you typically clean a day? Do you remember?
Oh, you know, I wish I had journaled all of this and kept this all written down. I honestly can't tell you.
Okay.
Probably 12.
Yep. Okay. And each cabin had 2 beds or 4 beds? How many?
They differed.
Okay.
And sometimes you had adjoining cabins, or, you know, 2 cabins would share a bathroom in the middle. Actually, Dick has probably told you this. When Mike and I went back married, he lived on one side of the bathroom, we lived on the other, and the three of us shared the bathroom.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, we worked out little ways to let each other know who needed it
mm-hmm.
and what time.
Mm-hmm.
I never cleaned over in the deluxe cabin side.
Okay.
Unless I was sent over there in an emergency or something. I always just did the standard cabins. Because by the end of the summer, I got to become a waitress, but I did love the cabin maid. It was fun. There just wasn't as much earnings.
Mm-hmm, right.
But sometimes there was a single bed, sometimes there was a double bed and a single bed, sometimes 2 single beds, and sometimes the cabin included a bathroom, and sometimes it didn't.
So that was a good day's work there.
It was, yeah.
And you had to keep moving. Did you get a chance to break for lunch?
Yes.
Okay.
And you'd go, I'm just trying to think. And then I believe we ate in the kitchen because, of course, the guests would be eating lunch in the dining room.
Yeah, yeah.
And the same thing. Whatever they were serving for lunch, I think we got to choose too, but we ate in the kitchen.
And that would that be the same then for dinner? Because they were serving the guests.
But once lunch closed, they served. You know, golly, how did that work? It opened up for breakfast. How it worked, not unlike the usual restaurants, they were just open for 2 hours at a time, and then we'd clean up between. We were able to go in and have lunch in the dining room between 11 and 12.
Okay.
And then they would serve from 12 to 2.
Okay.
And so we probably could be from 11 to a quarter to 12, something like that, because we had to be out so that the waitresses could set up their tables for
right.
the lunch
right.
Guests.
And then
dinner was the same way.
Okay.
We probably ate dinner from 5 to 6, and the dining room opened from 6 to 8.
All right. That makes sense. I'm curious about the laundry. Was that sent to a larger town for washing and drying and steaming and ironing and all that stuff, or did you guys actually have a laundry on site? Do you remember?
I believe there was a laundry on site.
Okay.
Not that we ever did it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the laundry... Do you remember that, Mike? I don't believe there was a laundry... I don't think the laundry went out. I think there was a laundry on site.
Okay. That's Dick wasn't sure about that, and I didn't know either. You know, it usually takes it... That's a lot of laundry.
It's a ton. So you know what? There must have been laundry trucks. There must have been. So
that would make sense.
I will check with my sister, and the next time we talk.
Okay.
I think she was more observant about those kinds of things than I was. She was older.
Okay. All right. And were you working 5 days a week, or 6 or 7 days a week? How many days a week were you on?
I believe 6.
Okay.
You got one day off a week.
And what did you do on your day off?
Oh, you know, you do your laundry, wash
yep.
your clothes, clean your room, read. Lots of girls would go out and sunbathe
okay.
by the dorm. I didn't. I had red hair and fair skin
oh.
and burned easily.
Mm-hmm.
Hiking, lots of hiking.
Where did you hike?
Everywhere. Now, I never went across the canyon. Mike did, and he can talk to you about that when
okay.
he did it.
Good.
But any trails we could find out to Angel Point, hike from the lodge to the inn on back roads, back trails, and we had a softball team.
Oh, wow.
We played softball, and we played each other. We played different, like the lodge would play the inn crew, and then we'd play the Bryce team, and we'd play the Zion team. They would come on a bus.
Nice. Okay.
And we'd go there, and then there were, you know, dances and activities and firesides and movies, and we all were expected to participate in the programs. We'd play the piano, sing songs, dance. And again, you'll find out when you interview Mike. Mike wrote some of the programs that they used for a number of years.
Yeah, Dick mentioned some songs.
He put together an Old South show, a grand show, and then there was always the variety show.
Okay. What?
And there's a good relationship between the park rangers and the bus drivers, and that brought in the guests, and everyone got along. As far as I know, there was minimal, if ever, any trouble.
Nice. Let's talk a little bit about your do you remember who your dorm mom was? Mabel, I think. Was that?
Mabel was the over
oh,
the linens.
She
and
was,
the, and
that's
the,
right.
The cabin mother. The dorm mother, I can feature her face perfectly, but the name's not there.
What else do you remember about her?
She was kind.
Mm-hmm.
And very unintrusive, you know, not bossy or you know, supportive, and always there, you know, and kind of walking up and down the halls, checking and
mm-hmm.
being aware as we came in and out. And there were curfew hours. I think we had to be in by 10:30.
Okay. All right.
And they inspected the dorms regularly for cleanliness and would award a room. You know, they pick, the manager would come through and pick the room that looked the best, and you get a free Sunday night dinner.
Okay.
And steak, if that's what you wanted, or prime rib. And as far as I know, everyone was, you know, most of them, everyone seemed to, did keep their rooms clean. We all shared the bathroom and the dorm, and it was always clean and nice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it
and,
sounds
know, for
like...
For me, it was my first experience of living with a variety of different people. I grew up in a solid Mormon community.
Okay.
And it was just really a wonderful experience to live and work and interact with people of different faiths and from different parts of the country and different expectations, going to different colleges and experiences, and it was great.
Oh, wonderful. So it kind of got you sort of, if you will, associated with a more global community?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Like Dick. Dick and I became very close friends.
Okay. Okay. Before we leave this, I want to go back to the hiking. Did you walk down to Roaring Springs what today is now the Cottonwood Campground?
Mike and I went down. Did we go any farther than Roaring Springs, Mike, or was that it?
No, I think that was it.
And he and I, after we'd been after we were married, did a, he wanted to see if I could walk across the canyon with
mm-hmm,
him.
Mm-hmm.
So we just did an experience down at Roaring Springs, and we knew that'd be as far as I could go.
Okay.
I could walk from here to New York City, Kentucky to New York, but I can't go up and down deep hills.
All right.
But yes, I did go down to Roaring Springs and loved it.
And did you walk the Widfirst Trail there? Is that WIDFO?
I think we did.
Yes.
Yes.
RSS. Okay. And you mentioned out to Angel's Gate, Angel's Landing.
Angel Point.
That's what, Cape Royal?
Yes. Angel's Point, right, just below the lodge there at North Rim, but we went out to Cape Royal and what's the other one, Mike?
Point Sublime.
Oh, to get to Point Sublime, you'd have to drive out there.
Yes.
How did you get out there? Who had the car?
Sometimes we took a tour bus.
Oh, really?
They let us ride with I think my first summer I did, Mike. They let us ride with them, but you would borrow each other's cars.
Were they taking tour buses all the way out to Point Sublime?
Yes.
Really?
Out to Point Sublime and out to Cape Royal.
No. This is Point Sublime is different than the other point that's out by Cape Royal.
Point
Imperial.
That's it.
Yeah, forget Sublime. Sorry, it was
so
Point Imperial.
There were no buses that went to Sublime.
Because it's quite a ways west, and it's pretty rugged out there.
Yeah, that was my mistake, right.
But it's a gorgeous place. And well worth the trip, and so it wouldn't surprise me that you guys went all the way out there to Point Sublime out west.
Did we ever, Mike?
Dirt roads.
Yes, you and Dick and I are out. I have pictures of it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. And Dick also mentioned that you were certainly encouraged or could get on the buses, I guess, that would go to the viewpoints out over the House Rock Valley out to the east there.
Yes, and you could even ride into Kanab if you wanted to. If you wanted to do some shopping.
Okay.
Or just get away and go to Perry's Lodge for lunch or dinner, and then you'd catch a ride back with the next tour bus coming back.
Okay. What do you remember about Perry's Lodge in Kanab?
That we all just thought they had wonderful hamburgers. Juicy, wonderful hamburgers,
okay.
and it was attractive and fun, and I'd get away from kind of the 24/7 experience at the North Rim.
Okay. Did you get a chance to visit with your parents that summer, or were you writing letters to them?
I didn't write letters, but my dad and his wife, my mom had died and he had remarried, came down and visited us at the Grand Canyon each summer that we worked there.
Oh, that's fun. Was that neat to see him there? And
say that again. I'm sorry.
I would assume that would have been enjoyable to have your dad there and
you
and
loved
visiting.
It. You loved it because, interestingly enough, sorry about that. Interestingly enough, my father worked at the Bryce Canyon as a young man himself before he was married. He was a cook.
Really?
And so to have us work at the canyons was very meaningful to him. And as it turns out, my next youngest brother didn't work at the North Rim like the rest of us did, but he worked at Bryce.
How old was your father when he worked at Bryce Canyon?
He was born in 1913, and he would have been, it was just right out of high school.
Okay. Because I'm thinking the, who was the Utah Parks? Was Utah Parks running Bryce at the time?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, very fun that he got down
there. Would have been in the late 20s.
Okay. All right. Were your brothers and sisters working at the North Rim when you were there?
My older sister and one of my younger brothers and I, the three of us were there at the same time.
Nice. So no chance for being homesick.
Nope.
Nice. Do you remember any unique things that happened while you were cleaning the cabins in any way? I mean, I'm not sure what to ask, but...
That's a good question, you know, if you could know then what you know now, you'd have paid more attention and made better recordings, and I could probably tell you dozens of unique things. No, cleaning the cabins was pretty regular for me.
Okay. And then you mentioned the end of that summer of 59, you changed jobs. Is that right?
Yes. At the end of 59, I was able to become a waitress. My sister always looked out for me, and she talked to the maitre d', who was Al, and I can't think of Al's last name. And he was very, very professional compared to the rest of us. All the rest of us were college kids
okay.
in the dining room. But he was older. I'd say he's probably in his 50s or 60s, and very efficient and very...
He had been a steward on the railroads.
Ah.
Okay, good. Right.
Okay.
So He ran it all very professionally, Al. And so my sister and Al liked my sister because she was a very good worker.
Okay.
And so when she mentioned to him, when an opening came up, could her sister come and try being a waitress, and he let me. So I was able to transfer from being a cabin maid to being a waitress.
What do you remember about that job?
Being a waitress?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely loved it.
Why?
It's just so much fun to meet so many different people, and
nice.
To learn how to, you know, to serve and interact with people to not only for the fun of it, not just for the tip, but just it was just a wonderful experience. And you know, on each of the tables, whichever tables you were assigned, you had cards made up that said Muriel Canaan or Muriel Judd the first 3 years. At your service, Brigham Young University.
Oh, wow.
And so that's, and on the tables, once Mike came, were the cards, Mike Canaan, requests appreciated at the Oregon University of Iowa.
Oh, fun.
And so it was...
So the people that were there at the table, they knew who you were.
Yes.
Fun.
Because of that. They were aware that they probably, we all hope that meant they'd be more inclined to leave a bigger tip.
Uh-huh.
Knowing you're, you know, working your way through college.
You know, I forgot something. Let's go back to the cabin maids again.
Mm-hmm.
Dick had mentioned some songs, some singaways.
Oh, thank you. for that, yes.
As cabin maids, were you a part of that?
Yes.
How did that work?
When they honked the horns, when the buses honked the horns, everybody who could, the wood boys, the cooks, the waitresses, the cabin maids, the bellhops, the desks, everybody who could were to come out in front and stand in kind of a semi-circle. And a program director had been hired each year we were there. And she would stand out in front and lead us in songs that would send the guests off.
What would you sing?
Let's see.
I have it.
Yeah, Mike has that all written down.
Okay.
Super.
Well, we definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
We'll, you know, I'd love to hear some of that, some of the verses.
Yeah. They were all original songs that someone had put together years before.
Okay.
And you learned them as soon as you got there. And we all put our arms around each other, stood in a half circle, you know, arm in arm. We're the crew and we work for you and we'll have our fun when the day is done. We all go rimming. You know, we get those kinds of words.
Do you guys have those written down?
Yes.
Yes. Am I turned on here?
Yes, you are.
We went to a reunion a few years back, and they handed out copies of all this music.
Wow, great.
Someone had gone to a lot of work.
So Dick may have that.
Well, maybe next time we talk, if you could find those between now and then and just read them out to me, that'd be great.
I have all of the music and the words for the grand show.
Okay.
But not the sing-aways.
We will get the sing-aways. We'll get all that put together.
That'd be great.
For the next time you talk.
I'd love to hear the words to that. That'd be really fun. Muriel, you mentioned wood boys and a whole list of other people, and I'm like, wait a minute, what's a wood boy?
Well, they were hired to chop wood and have them stacked in the cabins, the deluxe cabins, who had their own fireplaces.
Ah.
They don't have those anymore, but they did then.
Okay.
And it would be their job to chop wood and put it in wheelbarrows and take them to the deluxe cabins and stack them on the porch, I think.
Nice. That'd be nice in the cool of the morning just to cut the chill.
Yeah.
And
there were kids who worked at, where did Deanna work, Mike? At the
curio shop? At the fountain, soda fountain.
There was a soda fountain and a curio shop.
Okay.
Those workers would all come out, the curio girls and the fountain workers, and would all be, if you possibly could get away from work. And
would the bus boys and the front desk clerks, would those people try to get in there as well?
Yes.
Okay.
It was expected. The bellhops, everyone was expected. And, you know, we all became such good friends. We became friends with the rangers and what were they called, Mike, that took the donkeys down?
The mule?
Wranglers.
Yeah, the wranglers.
Okay. Do you remember the names of any of those people?
I don't.
No, isn't that sad?
Unknown caller. No worries. This sing-away sounds like just such a lot of fun, and I definitely would like to get the verses there. So shifting then to waiting tables, those are big trays you got to carry, and the plates are really heavy.
They were. It was hard work.
Wow.
You loaded on trays maybe for four or five or six people and loaded them on top of those big silver trays and put them up under your hand and carry them out.
Did you get?
And really, there were very few accidents. I had one, but most people, most of the bus boys and the waitresses were able to handle it.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, did you get any practice at handling a tray before you went live?
Well, the other waitresses helped each other. Yes.
Okay.
If you went in new. They helped you before people showed up in the morning or between breakfast and lunch. You might stay after and after the guests were all gone,
mm-hmm.
and ask for suggestions, and they'd show you and help you. Everyone was very cooperative and helpful.
Okay. And you, did you have a tray jack? You'd try to catch the tray in the tray jack and run it out there and put the jack down and then put the tray down? Is that how that would work?
The tray jacks would be standing by the setup tables.
Okay.
So a busboy would see you coming, might hurry and open one, or you might open one before you left to go in the kitchen to get your tray.
But people
kind of eyed and kept an eye on each other, and they would know what, you know, they'd be there for you.
Yeah, it sounded like it was quite a team effort.
It was, and you know, it was, as I said, it was expected that everybody would come and be a part of the programs, and after work we would practice. And then we'd all sing together and dance together and play together. So there was a lot of camaraderie.
Nice. You mentioned dropping a tray once. Was it loaded with dishes, or was it loaded with
the food? It was
work. Oops.
It was the entrees with the lids and the meat, the potatoes and gravy, vegetables. And all
no.
went everywhere.
Oh no. And then it's a quick cleanup. And order goes back in again. Apologies to the table because they're going to have to wait.
Right. And everyone was always very nice.
Oh, nice. Nice. And you minimize that, and then life goes on.
Yes.
Was there a change in the sort of your status as a, you know, coming from a cabin maid to a waitress? Was that a step up or?
It was. It was a step up, and usually not only did you make better money, but it meant you probably had been there a year or two, so
okay.
you had seniority.
Okay. And I'm assuming there was tips there?
Yes. And let me just parenthetically add, most of the waitresses had probably been cabin maids before.
Okay.
Or had worked at the inn as cabin maids or waitresses, and it was a promotion, if you will. To go to the position of waitress, yes.
The maitre d's last name was Beck.
Al Beck.
B-E-C-K?
Yes.
And Tom, Mike showed me a page here of the sing-away lyrics, and what we'll do is make a copy and mail it to you.
That'd be great. Would you mind to just sing it right now?
Well, the older song was, "We're the crew and we work for you, but we have our fun when the day is done. We can't go swimming, so we all go rimming, and rimming don't mean looking at the scenery. So come on, dudes, we'll show you our heaven, but we gotta be back to the door by 11:30. Hurry along, singing a song, meet you at the old Grand Rim, Grand Rim."
Bravo.
And then another one was, "All aboard, it's time to go. All aboard, it's time to go. Time to go, time to go. All aboard, it's time to go. With a hey and a hi and a ho, ho, ho. All aboard, it's time to go. Sun's gonna shine, grand makes it so. With a hey and a hi and a ho, ho, ho. Singing so long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. It's a long time since you've been home." And the boys come in. "Since you've been home," and we all go, "and you gotta be rolling along. I wanna be a friend of yours, a little bit more. I wanna be a pal of yours, a little bit more. I wanna be a bumblebee buzzing around your door. Then I'll have all this coming to me, and a little bit more. I want to have a big red moon, a little bit more. I want to have a log on the rim, a little bit more. I want to have a handsome dude, I won't ask for any more. Then I'll have all this coming to me, and a little bit more. We'll build a bonfire out on the rim, out in the moonlight, sitting on the old Grand Rim, Grand Rim. Don't be afraid, dear, you won't fall in. You're safe with me, dear, out on the old Grand Rim, Grand Rim." And then, "when evening shadows fall, we love Gran best of all. We love her whispering pines, and we want to be there all the time. And when the pale moon beams, somehow it always seems we'll see Grand in our dreams when evening shadows fall.
Bravo.
That's the ones we did.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
That's about the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah. There was one more here, but I don't remember
doing
it.
Yeah, no, I saw that too.
Yeah.
And that's the Sing-Away song.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very fun.
It was. And it brought us all close together. You know, it was just nice.
So lots of collegiality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The as a waitress today at the South Rim, the North Rim, those jobs are one of the most lucrative jobs because the tips pay an awful lot. Was that the case then?
The tips were good, and we always shared with the busboys.
Yes.
You'd count up your, you know, total up, and then I can't remember, give a certain percentage to the busboys.
Uh huh. Yeah.
But the tips were good. Very seldom were you what we called flatted, and there was no place to spend your money. You could just send it all home from the post office. And
nice.
Room and board. It was a good way to work and make money and save.
And save up some money for the summer or during the summer. Nice. And then, so that summer of 59, you would have met Dick Hingson.
Yep.
Okay.
That was the summer we met, yep.
All right. As you got ready to go at the end of that first year in 59, were you there up to closing?
Yes. Right. We didn't help close.
Okay.
Others stayed behind and helped close, but we rode the buses out.
Okay.
Back to Cedar City and on the train and back to Salt Lake City where my father picked us up.
Oh, took the train back, didn't get the Trailways bus.
Nope, got to take the train.
Okay.
And my sister got to take the train down the first time, you know, the summer she called and got me on, she'd taken the train down. And the next summer when I went down and my younger brother went with me, my father took us to the train in Salt Lake City, and we took the train out to Lund, Utah,
yes,
which is just outside of Cedar, right? And then rode buses to the North Rim.
And that was in 1960?
Yes.
Okay. The winter of 59-60, this is your first year at BYU, is that right?
Yes.
And how did that go?
Very well.
Okay.
I mean, college was a bit of a shock. Because I didn't ever take studying and all that seriously in high school. I wish I had, of course. So, but it went very well, yeah.
Okay. So you actually had to do some studying, read the books, and write the papers.
You're right. And BYU at that time was on a quarter system.
Huh.
So it was fast. It was classes every day, and the year just zipped.
Okay. So were there two quarters in the fall and two in the spring with summer off? Is that how that would work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. Okay. All right. So that was going in. Were you, when you left in 59, were you pretty much, I mean, did you talk to the managers there and say, you know, I'd like to come back next year? And
I think that was just kind of an understanding. Everybody thought they would be back the next year, but I think we had to let them know in the spring we were coming back.
Okay, so it'll be, in a way, reapply again?
Yeah, and maybe it was just by phone.
Okay.
Maybe you just called Lamar Snyder.
What do you remember about Lamar?
He was very, we liked him a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I remember his wife ran the post office, I think, or at least was there a lot. And
what was her name?
Gail.
Gail, yeah.
Okay. And so what do you remember about the Snyders?
They pretty much let you do your, you know, what you were supposed to do. And you could go to his presence. He'd walk through the kitchen. He'd walk through the dining room. He'd walk through the cabin area. And, and, you know, visit, and Gail was very friendly, and just he was your boss, and you knew that, and you tried to look especially good when he was there, and
mm-hmm.
Just very nice, felt good about it.
Nice.
Honestly, Mike, was he there all the summers you were there? Was he there 60 through?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he was.
Okay. So let's then go into 1960, and this is the year you met Mike, is that right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Mike came to play the organ.
Okay, so Mike, I'm going to spin around and ask you, what year were you born?
1939.
Where?
Washington, D.C.
What were your folks doing in Washington, D.C.?
They both worked for the government.
Doing what?
My mother was a secretary in the Internal Revenue Service.
Okay.
And my father worked for the General Accounting Office.
Okay. How long have they been in D.C.?
They moved there in the late 20s.
Okay.
And I think they were married there in 1930.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
No.
Okay. And did you go to high school there in Washington?
No, we when I was in the sixth grade, we moved to Chillicothe, Missouri.
What took your parents there?
His brother was in the insurance business there, and so he joined his brother in insurance.
Huh.
And my mother then worked in the office with them.
Okay. And your grandparents were nearby.
And my father's parents were about 35 miles away at Cameron.
Okay. What was growing up in Chillicothe like?
Oh, nice! A nice small town. Good experience.
How big was it, Mike? About 13,000, 11,000?
9,000.
Oh, why? So that's pretty small compared to Provo.
Yeah.
Did you get on the weekends? Were you into exploring and hiking and camping kind of thing?
No.
Okay.
Don't remember anything like that.
But I will say, almost from the time he could walk, Mike's been very much into musical things.
Ah.
Plays the piano, French horn, played for the Iowa marching band that went to the Rose Bowl.
Wow. What was your instrument of choice?
A piano.
Okay.
But he also plays the piano, the organ, and does lots of plays everywhere. Plays for funerals and weddings, and played at Little America and Flagstaff for Mother's Day and
oh, fun.
Holidays. And
so in the marching band, I'm sorry, what did you play?
An altonium.
What's that?
It was it looks like a very small tuba. About the size, I guess, of a trumpet, only it was shaped like a tuba.
Okay.
And that's what, this was in the 1950s, what people who played French horn played altonium in the marching band.
Okay. Nice. Were you thinking that you were going to go to college then after high school?
Yes.
And were you thinking to do that in music?
No. I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Okay. Normal.
Yeah.
How was it that you ended up in 1960? Well, let's see. What year did you graduate from high school?
1957.
Okay. And then what did you do from 57 to 60?
I went to the University of Iowa.
Where'd you work? Summers.
Oh, is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, yeah.
I was a lifeguard at the pool in Chillicothe.
Okay.
In the summers.
Did you like to swim?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, okay. And what were you studying in the university? Were you just taking general courses, or did
yes.
something come together? Okay.
Sociology eventually came together.
Okay.
And that's what I ended up majoring in.
Okay. How did you hear that there was a job way out west?
It's a very interesting story.
We had good friends from Washington, D.C. One of them was a judge. And they would go out west in the summertime and often stop by in Chillicothe on their way out or their way back just to say hello because
mm-hmm.
they had been good friends in Washington.
Okay.
And in the summer of 58 or 59, they stopped by on the way back to Washington and said they had just spent a week at the North Rim.
Oh.
And that there was an organ in the dining room there, and they knew I played around a little. And they said, you know, you ought to apply for that job and get that job. So I kind of put that, stashed that away in my head,
mm-hmm.
but went ahead. Then that was at the end of a summer, and the next summer, I continued to work at the pool. And then in the middle of the winter, that next winter, I decided I needed to try going out there. So I just wrote a letter out and said I was interested, and they sent me a train ticket back.
Wow. Had you ever been west of the Mississippi?
Well, while I was in Iowa, I was in the marching band.
Okay.
And in the at the season 1958-59, Iowa won the Big Ten championship.
Ah.
And so we were going to be playing in the Rose Bowl, and Santa Fe was the sponsor of taking the band, and which at that time was all males, and there was an all-female group at the University of Iowa called the Scottish Highlanders.
Okay.
And so the band and the Scottish Highlanders were the Santa Fe provided a train.
Wow.
And with I call them sleepers. What were they? Pullman cars.
Yeah.
And we had to give up that Christmas vacation. We went down to Fort Madison, Iowa, is where the Santa Fe goes through Iowa. That's the only place they go through Iowa back
okay.
in those days. And the school took us down on buses and put us on the train. We went out then to Pasadena and did all of the things out in Los Angeles. I think that was only, we were out at Disneyland, I think only the third year they were open.
Right.
And then on the way back, let's see, the train stopped and took that trip up from Williams up to the South Rim.
Oh, wow.
And so we were then at the South Rim just for a couple or 3 hours that day.
Uh-huh.
And that was my first experience to see the Grand Canyon, actually to see a lot of the West, and then came back. So I had been to the South Rim then. That was January 4th, I think, of 1959.
Okay.
That the train went up to the South Rim.
Hmm. Nice. What were your thoughts first time you walk up the edge, you look out there, and
oh yeah, it was it's always awe-inspiring.
Yeah,
you know, where the organ sat in the dining room was right at the head of the stairs that goes down into the sunroom, and I would often be, I was either playing for lunch or for dinner, but and in between songs, and people would arrive either on buses or in their own cars, and they'd come in the lodge, and you couldn't really see much from the road driving up to the south, up to the north rim.
Right.
But they'd park, and then they'd come into the lodge, and when they'd walk across the lobby, you could see that sunroom down there, and then those huge windows on the sunroom that
yes.
opened onto the canyon. And daily, people would just, they would just lose their breath.
Wow.
And that was the same kind of feeling I had. And I just would hear that over and over again.
Nice.
And can I, Terrence, dedicate this point to
add? I don't hear you.
Yeah, Muriel, I'm not hearing
can
you.
Can I just parenthetically add at this point that Mike always played the Groface Grand Canyon Suite at sunset.
I was going to ask you what you played. What was your favorite piece there in that, you know, by the organ, looking down on the sunroom and then out to the canyon beyond? What really inspired you there?
Well, I got there in the summer of 1960. And I had just taken a bunch of books doing show tunes and things like that. And then after I was there just a week, I realized I needed a copy of the Grand Canyon Suite.
Nice.
And I also needed more music. So I wrote back to my folks and had them go to the music store in Chillicothe and get me what are called fake books. And
what are those?
They got me two fake books. Each one has about 1,000 songs in it.
Wow.
And also a copy of the Grand Canyon Suite.
Okay.
So when that music arrived, I took 2 or 3 hours that day or the next day learning On the Trail. Are you familiar with that?
No.
It's. Are you familiar with Philip Morris cigarettes?
Well, only that they exist.
Well, there used to be an ad on the radio and television, and it showed a kind of a bellhop type character stepping out into the room saying, "Call for Philip Morris."
Okay.
And in the background, they played On the Trail from the Grand Canyon Suite there.
Okay.
And so I figured that was the part of the Grand Canyon Suite that most of the people were familiar with, because that was, of course, in 1960, and everybody was smoking then. So
right.
That people were familiar with that. So that, and as Muriel says, I then got to playing that as the sun would set.
Fun. Let's back up a minute, Mike, because I ran ahead a little too fast. So you wrote Utah Parks and said, "Hey, I hear you have an organ there at the lodge, and I'd like to play it for the summer."
Yeah.
Did they not have anybody playing it there?
They did. Actually, it was, I think, just as well that I didn't write the year that our friends from Washington suggest I write, because that year they had someone.
His last name was Kimball, I think.
Yeah, it might have been.
Okay.
And because they had someone, they wouldn't have, you know, you only have one organ there. So
yeah.
They wouldn't have need. I happened to write just at a time when that job opened up. I was writing in January, so they knew about, by then, probably, that they weren't going to have someone.
Okay. And
but they of course, had never heard me play, didn't know whether I could even manage it or not.
Wow.
Had no, they asked for no references.
Huh. They were trusting.
Yeah, it was, it impresses me now that I think about it.
Well, you wouldn't have taken the Santa Fe, because that would have landed you on the South Rim. How did you get out there?
Oh, Well, they sent me a train ticket on. Remember the North Rim and Zion and Bryce and Cedar Breaks were all run out of Cedar City.
They were a package.
And the thing was called the Utah Parks Company.
Right.
And that's UP.
Okay.
Union Pacific.
Okay.
And so what they sent me was a train ticket from Omaha, Nebraska to Lund, Utah, where I would get off the train. And I had to take a Wabash train from Chillicothe overnight. I got on about 1 o'clock in the morning and got up to Council Bluffs probably around 5 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
That morning. Took that Wabash train up to Council Bluffs, had to locate a taxi to take me across the river to the Union Pacific depot.
Mm-hmm.
And picked up the train there.
So it sounds like quite the grand adventure.
It was. It was. As I think back on it, I'm a little amazed.
And then you must have been put in a dorm, kind of like Muriel, sort of the boys' dorm. Is that how that worked?
I was, yes.
Okay.
I was. And I think I was there that whole year of 1960, that whole summer, yeah. I think I was in that dorm the whole summer.
Okay.
But one of the things about the organ player is that that person was referred to as staff. And staff included the people who worked the desk, the registration desk, and the managers, and the department heads, and people like that.
Okay.
So that because I was staff, then when I had my meals, I just went down into the dining room, and one of the waitresses would come out and wait on me, just like I was a tourist.
Oh, my. So you had a little more flexibility.
A lot more.
You didn't have to get up super early. When would you start your day? When would you, sit down at the organ and start playing?
Around noon.
Oh, my.
The lunch ran from 12 until 2.
Okay. And then?
And then at night, I think it ran, began at 5, I think. Was it 6 to 8? May have been.
Would you play the same favorites for the lunch crowd as the dinner crowd, or would you? Did you have
never do the Grand Canyon Suite at lunch.
Okay.
I just did. I started through my fake books.
Okay.
And I had that card on the table. That's because after I was there that 2 or 3 weeks when I ordered the music, I also told my mother to hunt up some cards I could put on the table.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and I've got an organ here, and there's a card sitting on it.
Nice. Did people give you tips? Did you have a little tip jar there? How'd
yes,
that work?
There was what I did almost right away, because people would try to hand me money as they go out, and I'm trying to play.
Uh-huh.
And that made things a little awkward. I'm totally inexperienced at any of this, so I went up into the gift shop, the curio shop. That's what it was. Yeah, the curio shop, and bought a kind of a copper looking tray and a little monkey that you could bend in all kinds of positions. So I then put that little bowl out on the edge of the organ, and then had the monkey on the edge of that bowl, and then in the monkey's hands was a little sign that said thank you.
Oh, fun.
And people would just then put money there.
Well done.
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, I just, tips ran anywhere from my low day would be, and was often typical, was around $2 or $3, and good days were around $9 or $10.
Wow. Okay. So were you doing the same thing? Were you sending money home? Were you, you know, basically just banking the money away? There's nothing else to do there, like I say, to spend it.
That's right. There was nothing else to do.
Uh-huh.
Well, except I don't know that this has much to do with what you're interested in, but after I was there in 1960, after I was there about a month, one of the tubes or something went out on the organ.
Oh.
And so they had to ship the organ up to Salt Lake City to be repaired.
Wow.
Now, this organ was a Hammond, an old one. The original lodge was built in the late 20s and burned.
Yes.
In the early 30s. And the rebuilt lodge was opened again, I think, about 1935 or 36. And at that point, they put in what was then a state-of-the-art Hammond organ. It was then called a Model A.
Okay.
It's now, if you find Model A's around anywhere, they're antiques.
Yeah.
But that was put in then in 1936, and it was still there when I was there in 1960. And so I think maybe that was the first time that they had had any trouble with it. So they sent the organ up to be repaired, and that put me out of work doing that.
What did you do?
Well, I was all one of the things the employees had to do was be involved in the programs.
Okay.
That they did in the evening up in the recreation hall. There was a stage there with a piano on it and a microphone and so on. That's, if you go to the North Rim now, that's where you go to hear Ranger lectures and things like that.
Got it, yes.
But in the 60s, there were programs every night.
Okay.
And as Muriel said, one of them was called the Grand Show, and one of them that we put together was called the Old South Show. And by the way, the Old South Show was put together while that organ was out of commission.
Okay.
So I had all this time on my hands, and we put together that program and a one called a Western Show, and
then the Variety Show, and you played every night.
Yeah, and so I was involved in those shows.
What would you play there? With what instrument would you play? Given that the organ was gone,
The piano was up on the stage.
Ah.
A grand piano.
A grand piano, yeah.
Wow. A small grand? Baby grand?
No, it was bigger than a baby grand, but it's, I'd call it probably a standard grand.
Okay.
5/8.
And did you tune it, or did somebody else tune it? Was it in tune? Because I'd imagine that might...
It was in tune, and somebody else must have tuned it. I didn't know anything about tuning.
Okay. All right.
And then, so when the organ came back... Then I went back to playing the organ at lunch and at dinner and still doing those shows every night. But it was while I was free from having to worry about playing the organ that I did the hike across the canyon and some other things like that, because it kind of freed me up.
Okay, so just for clarification here, you would play the organ at noon, through the lunch hour.
Yes.
And then again in the evening from
yes.
6 to 8 during the dinner meal time.
Yes.
And then once you were done at 8, you would head over to play the piano for the Variety Show or the Western Show or the
That's
Old
right.
South Show. Okay.
Yeah.
So you had a busy day.
Yeah. And no days off.
7 days a week.
Yeah.
Ah. Okay. So, no trips to Kanab for you.
No, well, actually, there were. So how did I manage? Well, first of all, I made a couple of trips to Kanab while the organ was broken those 10 days.
Mm, okay.
But another interesting thing that we did, this was also while the organ was broken, was probably four or five of us, or maybe six, got into a car. One of the people that worked there, one of the assistant managers, had a car,
mm-hmm.
and the manager of the lodge had a what do you call it? A 38mm camera. Is that what you call it?
16mm? A movie camera, you mean?
Yeah, but not 16mm. It was
8mm?
Small.
Oh,
I don't know what they're called.
Okay.
But anyway, so I borrowed that camera, and the four or five of us went up to a place called Johnson Canyon, which is about 10 miles, 15 miles east of Kanab, Utah,
mm-hmm.
which was an old movie set. And we made a probably 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 minute movie.
Oh, fun.
Out there.
Huh.
And then the next week, while the organ was still broken, we went up to a movie set, which was about 3 miles south of Kanab.
Okay.
An old fort. And we made another movie there.
Fun.
And then showed those movies around to the employees because they knew everybody that was in it.
That's fun. Okay.
Yeah. That was another thing that happened when the organ broke.
Hmm. Let's talk about your rim to rim. Who did you hike across with? Do you remember?
You were like the leader.
Yeah, there were at least one or two bellhops and a couple of cabin maids or maybe waitresses. I can't remember. There were all together probably four or five of us. We hiked down from the North Rim down to Phantom Ranch and slept on the concrete. There was a pool down there.
Yes.
And the concrete, what would you call that around the pool?
An apron?
Well, yeah, like an apron. And we slept there overnight and then got up the next day and hiked up the Bright Angel Trail to get to the top. And then at that time there was a landing strip on the North Rim.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a ride out to the airport at the South Rim and flew back
nice.
To the North Rim.
Nice.
And that all together took probably a little over a day.
And then you'd need to get a ride from the airport back down to the lodge. And
yeah, I guess we did.
Tie that
I
up.
I guess we did. And we must have, it must have been done with telephones, although it was hard. The lodge had a phone, and there was a payphone in the lodge, but I think none of the rooms had phones.
Okay.
And, of course, there were no cell phones or anything like that.
Mm.
So somehow or other, we must have communicated for somebody to pick us up.
Was this during the monsoon season, or was this before then? Did it rain on you guys as you made your crossing, or?
No, it didn't. So
okay.
It must have been before that. It must have been in June.
Okay. Nice. And did you have a good time doing that? Was it hard? Did you get blisters? Was it enjoyable?
It was very enjoyable.
Nice.
It was very hard.
Nice.
But you felt like you had done something when you were done with it.
Yeah, enjoyable and hard. Well, it's nice to go from the North Rim to the South Rim because it's longer downhill than it is uphill.
That's right.
And you don't have to hike up as high, so it all worked out.
That's right. You can start out 1,000 feet higher and not have to go back 1,000 feet up.
Would a lot of the employees make that hike?
No.
I don't know. I guess not. Muriel says no, but
I don't think so.
I don't know either.
Okay.
You know, one thing that did happen to us that was very interesting, our last summer there, we had become good friends with the Wranglers, and so they said they would take us for free on the donkeys down the canyon and back.
Wow.
And the day before we were supposed to go, that night, that afternoon and night, the Grand Canyon received, what was it, 18 inches of rain?
Something like 17 or 18, yeah.
Yeah, the North Rim did, and just washed out everything, trails
wow.
and everything. And I think we just, like, closed down the next day.
Yeah, that canceled
yeah.
the mule trips.
Was this 66? I'm trying to remember.
63.
Okay.
But it was the storm itself was on the North Rim. I don't know that it was a
I
storm
said
like that,
that
on
I meant
the South Rim.
Just
I think
north.
The storm
north.
Was on the North Rim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And that was our last summer there.
So, in 1960, I'm looking at the time here, going, we've been yakking an hour and 15 minutes. Maybe this is a good time to wrap up this part
yeah.
one interview, because I want to pick up again next time with how you two met, and then learn a little bit more about the musical performances and that there in 1960. As we wrap this up now, is there anything else that you came to mind that you wanted to add about any of the material you've told me already?
Well, yeah, I will add on one other little thing. After not the first year, but the second, third, and fourth years that I was there, 61, 2, and 3, I don't know what they, where this came from, but they had a very large loudspeaker. And so the manager suggested that we have that out on the at the top of the stairs outside the door of the fellowship hall, and that could be hooked up to the organ, and that would be turned on at the time I was doing the Grand Canyon Suite at sunset.
Oh, wow.
And so people who were out on the patio and even probably along the trails there around the cabins or wherever that speaker could be heard, would be able to hear that there.
Fun. Huh. Okay, well, I'll probably want you to tell that story again in part two. All right, well, I think in that case, let's go ahead and wrap this up. This is going to conclude part one, Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with Mike and Muriel Canaan. Today is September 19th, 2019. My name is Tom Martin, and Mike and Muriel, thank you so very much.
Oh,
you're welcome.
You're welcome.
It's been a joy.